Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this talk about creating beautiful UX. Before we get started, who here is passionate about UX? Please put your hand up. Awesome, there's a great collection of you. Well, the good news is you're in good company. My name is James Clark, and this is my esteemed colleague, Mr. Tim Heuer. And for the next hour or so, we're going to show you some of the new capabilities we're adding in Windows 10. And I'm going to kick it off just by getting us thinking a little bit about beautiful. So, let's go to the beautiful slide. So, when people ask me about beautiful, I couldn't really think of a good analogy. So I came up with something that was very prosaic called bacon. It's like, beautiful is a bit like bacon. It's very hard to define, but when you taste it, you just want more and more and more of it. And I think beautiful is very much the same way. So as we watch this motion playback, notice just kind of like how gracefully this control resizes and just how kind of alive and engaging it feels. And notice also that as the transitions occur, there's really lots and lots of different animations happening in a very subtle, coordinated way. And so, you know, hopefully kind of the reaction you get when you see this is one of delight. And this is why beautiful UI matters, we think. And this is really because delighted users are the users that are going to come back to your app again and again and be sticky and give you the 5-star ratings that you really want. So we want to focus this talk on actually working in a real app. You don't want to hear us talking about a bunch of stuff. You want to see us writing some code, and we want to get onto that. Before we do so, we just want to position exactly what we're going to show you today and how it fits into the platform. And I'm going to hand that to Tim.
Exactly. So when we think about like what are the tools that are available to you guys as developers for creating beautiful UI and user experiences on Windows, we think about those, and we call those the Windows UI platform. And the things that encompass the Windows UI platform is a set of different aspects, different set of technology. And we think about these as layers. You may have seen this kind of slide before earlier in the week. We have pretty distinct layers that we think about as far as the UI platform. At the lowest layer, we think about the graphics layer. So these are the actual, you know, how the bits get on the screen, the rastering, the text, and all those things. In the middle, we have something that you may have not heard of or heard these terms before, but we're going to introduce it to you today and talk about a lot of the enhancements in this area, what we call the visual layer. And these are where animations, expressions, input-based routing and manipulations occur. And then at the top, we refer to it as the framework layer, right? These are higher-level abstractions, encapsulations of controls, the developer experience in Visual Studio, accessibility, data binding, those type of things. If we were to put names to these layers, these probably should look familiar to you. At the lowest level, these are like the DirectStar technologies, DirectX, DirectWrite, all of those things. In the middle is this namespace Windows UI composition, or the visual layer, which you're going to be hearing a lot about today. And at the top is something that should be familiar to a lot of you, which is XAML. We refer to it as XAML in the framework layer. Now, when we think about these layers, we think about what you can do on these things on a spectrum. And we'd like to really help you understand today that there's a spectrum of possible versus easy. Like, sure, you could write your app completely in DirectX, a non-game app and completely in DirectX. You'd be doing a lot of work, right? You're going to have to own your input, your control layers, your accessibility, and a lot of those things. But it is entirely possible to do that. It is also possible to do various things in the composition layer. And at XAML, we try to make a lot of these concepts easier to approach, right? You know, controls is one way to think about that. So let's actually think about a concrete example. Like, what do we mean by possible versus easy? So this is a picture from James's childhood. It's a pretty awesome bike that he has there. I mean, like, who has a special purpose seat? I have no idea, but...
Is it a chopper?
And look at that shifter. Like, I want one of those on mine. So when we think about an image here and like how this image gets on the screen, this is how we start thinking about a possible versus easy. Now I'm going to spare you the actual Windows image coding code of what it would take to actually take an image and decode it. But let's look at what the Windows composition code might look like to actually get an image and display it on the screen. So there's a lot of code here, right? You got to create a drawing surface, get the bits out, and start doing draw image calls and things like that. But what do you as developers want? You want something easy. You don't want to have to do this over and over again. And that's where that higher level abstraction comes in and what we see to as XAML, right? So this is something that we take for granted, but kind of demonstrating that you can do everything's possible at the lower levels, but we want to make it easy for you. And to display an image here, you just supply the source. And then you can add things on top of it and suddenly make it accessible, and we make that, again, easy for you. So that's what we really want to make sure that you understand today, is there's this spectrum of possible versus easy. And we're going to show a variation of a lot of those different things in the features we demonstrate today. So let's talk about the visual layer next.
Awesome. Thanks, Tim. So who here, another show of hands, has heard of us refer to the visual layer before today? Please, show of hands. Awesome, reasonable number of people. So we're going to do a really quick recap now, and then I'm going to share with you some of the new features that we're adding. We think of the visual UI, the visual layer as a common UI foundation for Windows. And really what we mean by that is it's the technology layer that powers the shell. And so whether it's PCs or phones or Xbox, it's the same layer powering those UI platforms, the shell experiences rather. And then in terms of the UI frameworks as well, so XAML, WWA, our bridge technologies, we power those layers as well. And finally, the browser rendering stack. So if you happen to be doing, if you happen to be programming your animations using CSS3 transitions or animations, or XAML storyboards, it actually doesn't matter because we have a common implementation in the engine. Now, one of the really critical aspects of having this common layer is performance. And part of performance is the whole universal, UWP universality, where we have to run really well on, for example, as depicted here, a IoT device. And we've actually got this running in our booth. If you come down to the expo, and you can see it performing really nicely there. But it isn't just about scaling from the perspective of hardware. It's also in terms of the number of visuals. You know, as you start to get these engaging experiences where you want to have lots of animations, it's really important that there aren't cliffs for you as a developer. So in terms of the API surface, what is the API surface for the visual layer? Well, there's really three fairly straightforward categories. The first one, content visuals. This is a set of lightweight rendering primitives for getting content on the screen. The animation system is independent. This means that if you run code on the UI thread while an animation is running, it doesn't glitch, which is great. And it's also framework agnostic, as I mentioned. And then finally, the third pillar is the effects system. And this is really a new layer that we've been building that brings real-time effects to the platform. So the only effects we put into the effects system are ones that we know we can make work really well across all of the devices and have them be really dynamic and kind of filled with motion. So if I just now kind of recap through each area, there's a series of APIs that you will have encountered if you've played with the visual layer. We have sprite visuals. We have the ability to do sort of simple interop with XAML. And then on the animation side, keyframe animations and expression animations. We'll talk a lot about expression animations in a little while. And finally, on the effects system, what we kind of talked about in the past was how our effects were kind of, you know, very much aimed at imaging and kind of doing color effects, those kind of things. So what have we been doing in the last year? Quite a lot, actually. We've been very busy. All of the boxes you see on the screen now with the sort of new next to them are new APIs we introduced back in the November refresh of Windows. And this was also where we took the visual layer APIs and made them public. So you can actually submit your store app call these APIs. And quite a bunch of what we'll show you will actually work on that release. However, we didn't stop there. And this is kind of, Kevin in his keynote, you saw a little bit of a glimpse of this. We've been busy since November, and some of us are very tired, I have to say. adding new visual capabilities, so new brushes, some really good improved interoperability with XAML that enables some really powerful capabilities like layout animations. And then on the animation system front, we've added implicit animations. And again, this will be something that we'll show you in a minute. And finally, I think one of the ones that's really interesting to me is connected animations. And this is where you can actually have an animation span across two different pages in a XAML app. And then on the effects side, who here is happy to see blur on this list? Any more than that? Yeah, we're very excited to have a great real-time blur capability in the system. And we'll show you some demos of that in a minute. Also, we've added drop shadows, some powerful new capabilities there. And finally, some lighting capabilities. So this is all sort of somewhat tedious hearing me go through this. Why don't we actually show you something running in a real app? So we thought, what better place to look for a real app than Fabricam, that sort of epitome of awesome demo fodder.
Now, hey, Tim? We titled our presentation Real World. I'm not sure Fabricam is real world, and my friend Bruce here agrees that Fabricam is not real world. So we got to come up with something better, James, and we have. So We chose to partner with you, the developer community, and specifically some MVPs and working on an open source project. So today, if you haven't heard, we're going to of this app, we'd like to introduce you to an app called Kleva. And Kleva is an app that's centered around fitness. And this is a screenshot of kind of where the state of the app exists today in the UWP version. And we partnered with a couple of great MVPs. Bart's here in the audience. All right, raise your hand, Bart.
Yay.
So he was able to make the trip with us, and Glenn was not able to make the trip, but is really great partnering with the developer community. James and I love working with the community, and so these guys worked tirelessly to do the things that we needed to do in order for us to do things to show for you today. So our goal is to work with an actual real-world app. We took their source code and their experiences, and we're going to try to enhance them and make them a little bit more beautiful and add some of these new features in a couple areas. We haven't done all of the app. We have a lot of work to do, and we'll talk a little bit more about that at the end. But really appreciate these guys jumping in. This is, you know, real working code. It's powered by a real service that, you know, maybe latent. We're hoping it's not going to be latent today. But it's, you know, it's actually an actual real app that we're integrating this stuff within their code. And so we're going to make some changes to a couple views here to you know, spruce up the API, show some interactions, show some animations and effects. And this is an open source app, so it is available on GitHub. And we're going to talk about that a little bit at the end here. So let's start talking about and introduce you to a couple of things that we're going to show today. We've got a lot of code that we want to show you today. And we have a complimentary session tomorrow with Nick Wagner and Dave Driver, who are going to go a little bit deeper into some of the aspects of the animation and lighting systems, mostly like expression. So we're going to show you some expression animations. We're not going to go as deep into explaining some of the actual depth of, you know, the expression language and things like that. So we want to make sure that you're aware of those. But we're going to be using a lot of those today. We're going to, you know, over the next 40 minutes, we're going to show a ton of code and go very quickly. So we're going to introduce you to a couple of the demos that we're going to do here. So as you see on the screen here, we've got a typical list view. And if you've worked with the XAML list view here, you'll know that it has, you know, a built-in animation of when items come in. But if you want to customize that, you really aren't able to very easily, or you're not able to on a way that you want. So if you look at this example here, this is the XAML list view. And it has a specific custom entrance animation for the items. Things are coming out at different offsets. They're fading in. That's not the standard animation. And we're going to show you how, using the visual layer and keyframe animations, that you can customize your kind of stagger in of the individual items here. And how you do that is you're going to see this common pattern over and over again as we demonstrate today. But we're going to try to show things again on that possible and easy spectrum. So I want to keep that in your mind. So how you do that is you're going to leverage the container content changing event, we affectionally call this CCC in the XAML team, to actually tap into the render pipeline. And that will allow you now to use the visual layer to get the visual element and create keyframe animations on those and attach to those and start the animations on each one of those things. Next thing we want to show you is the canonical refresh UI, right? So pull to refresh. And until we incorporate this properly into list views so that you don't have to do a lot of this yourself, we want to show you the best and most performant way on how to do that. How many people have tried to implement pull to refresh before? My guess is you have multiple scroll viewers going on and all sorts of different tricks that probably were painful to do and not really performant. And so again, using the visual layer and the integration we have, we're going to show you how you can use the visuals integration with scroll viewer properties in order to get those kind of input-driven interactions and create a pull to refresh experience on list view. And again, so we'll talk about properties that the compositor and the visual layer automatically know about XAML scroll viewers and how you leverage those properties and handle the manipulation in the rendering pipeline, event pipeline, and again, using those animations. Was that it? Pull to refresh, yes. Okay, the next thing we want to talk about is what James introduced as connected animations. So this is the concept of retaining context across view transitions, right? So as if you think about a typical kind of list scenario or maybe a contact scenario where you select a user and you go to a different page, you know, if you just kind of navigate to that page and the user may lose context. So We want to give you the tools that you can kind of create a way to kind of connect visuals across one view to another in order to provide that context across the navigation or different view changing to your users. And we're going to do that in a very simple way. And we call these connected animations. And we're going to show you how to light up this feature so that you can actually write the code today in your, if you have an app that ships on the November update, that you can still ship that app and light this code up as people start using the next version of Windows. And we're going to talk about this connected animation service that makes this is one of those things that we've made easy rather than the lower level possible, which is still possible. We'll show you how XAML has made it easy with this connected animation service. And lastly, we're going to talk and show about implicit animations. And implicit animations are how you basically describe, we believe actually this is the future of animations for the XAML framework. This is where you describe an animation on what you want to happen when properties change. So today in XAML, where you kind of create storyboards and you explicitly start beginning the storyboards and ending them, we want you to be able to say, hey, whenever the position of this thing changes, animate it this way, rather than saying, I need to animate this into a position change. And so we call these implicit animations, where you hook something up based on the offsets property or the opacity, and whenever those properties change, your animation that you've defined kicks in. And so we'll show that in the context of a list. You can kind of see it here a little bit as the screen resizes, how the elements are kind of replaced a little bit more fluidly than the standard animation that we show here. So let's go ahead and jump in to Kleva here, and we're going to start doing some of these demos. All right, so I'm going to just run the app in the state that I have it on my machine here, just to kind of give you a feel of the area that we're working with, and then we'll go through these those four areas and start integrating this code. And we're hoping everybody stop using internet. And stop using my compiler, apparently. So the first thing we're going to do is I'm going to focus on the activity feed. So this is kind of when you launch the application, shows the activities that that people, it's a social network, so that people that I follow were involved with, and kind of the feed and activities that they're involved in, whether it's cycling or running or anything like that. And so this is a standard kind of your canonical list view here, and you saw that it kind of had the default list view transition. We want to differentiate our app, so we want Kleva to have a specific personality, as we want your apps to have a specific personality, too. We strive for the framework to deliver a personality and a good default experience, but we really want you to bring your experiences and your personality and your brand to your applications. So there's the standard list. It's got a data template with a bunch of things in it, and we're going to change the entrance animation first here. So if I go into our feed control here, I mentioned that CCC event is the way that you kind of get into the pipeline. And so that's something that has existed on list view for a while now. So here's our list right here. This is a standard XAML list view that we're going to be working with here. Now, the first thing we want to do is we actually want to start turning things off in order so that we can customize things. So I'm going to actually make sure that I have turned off the scrolling placeholders, which is if I start panning too fast, we have a default experience that we kind of show some placeholders until those data templates are realized. And the next thing I want to do is I basically want to say, hey, the item container transitions that you have, oops, I don't want to bind, I just want to clear those out. So I want to turn those off because I'm going to be providing my own. And the way that I provide my own is I'm going to use this new event, container content changing. And this is gets you into the rendering pipeline for any list or repeater scenario within XAML. It allows you to do various different things with performance. And in this case, we're not using the performance aspect of it. We're using it to make sure that we can actually get to the visual layer of that individual list view item. So we're going to go into that event here. And the first thing we're going to do is we're going to put in some code here. I'm going to show you. I'm going to hide my own specific performance-related code here, but we're just going to get access to the content template root, which represents the data template for that specific item, and then we're going to make sure that we have the various different item things that we're going to later need to check different data aspects. So for that container, as long as it's not being recycled, we want to get into its loaded aspect here. So we're going to go ahead and actually just create an event handler for this. Oops. create an event handler. Sorry. Why is it not? And so we'll come back to that. So the one thing that, as you start working with the visual layer, there's a repeated pattern that you're going to see. So you're going to need access to the compositor. The APIs that we work with are compositor-based. So a very common pattern that we're going to work with here is actually setting up some compositor kind of member variables. So this is probably the most repeated pattern you're going to see today, is making sure that you have some way of accessing the compositor. Most people will probably do this in a member variable in this specific view. These are just specific to my experience that I'm going to create. So these are just constants of like the different animations and milliseconds that I want my animation and opacity to come in. So basically, I want mine to scale in from a certain point, fade in during that scale, and also have the text come in at a different stagger there. So I've set up some of these constants here. And then I'm just going to make sure that I initialize my compositor. So I'm just going to add a quick function here. And then we'll populate that function. My IDE is not cooperating very well. So how we do that in the compositor is we use the API called Element Composition Preview. And Element Composition Preview is going to be your friend in trying to get at the visual layer for XAML objects here. So you can see that I have this API called Get Element Visual. And I'm just going to reference the whole page here for now because I'm not actually needing the visual. I need the compositor from that. And the compositor in this case is a shared instance. So if I do this call later on somewhere else, I'm getting the same shared kind of instance of the compositor. So this is you're going to see us use this API pretty heavily today. So now I have that compositor populated, and I can start working with that. Let's go back to our loaded event here and actually start using that compositor. So what we're doing here in the loaded event, again, I'm using the arguments to get to the specific containers of the list view. That's what this initial setup is, and I'm trying to find specific items within the template. The important thing here is starting at line 188. Don't need a breakpoint. And this is where, again, I'm using that element composition preview, and I'm saying, hey, I want to get the visual layer, the visual object, for that specific container. So if you remember, we're in the CCC event, so we're in the rendering pipeline, and for each item, we're getting this aspect, and I'm saying, go get me the visual layer for that specific item. Now I'm going to change some properties on that. I'm just saying, hey, I need to set some initial values of that, because those are the starting points that I want. And then I'm going to create a set of animations. Let me walk through just one of these, just so you can, again, kind of see the pattern here. And we'll talk about expression animations in a little bit. So I'm going to use a keyframe animation here. I'm creating this offset. This is the first one, so this is basically where it's coming in from the list. And using that member variable of the compositor, that's where I get my animation. So I'm creating a scalar keyframe animation. And then I'm inserting various different keyframes here. So I'm just inserting a keyframe with properties, and I'm setting a duration and a delay time. Notice on the delay time, I'm actually passing in the index because I don't want them all to come in. That's the whole point of staggering, right? They're going to come in at a different interval. So I'm calculating its index times 100 milliseconds here. So this is, again, the same pattern you'll see us use today in creating animations. Now I have a couple other different types ones here. Here's a vector 3 keyframe animation. I'm using the compositor to create that and insert the keyframes using those same values. Now the next thing I do is I actually attach those animations to the visual. So remember we got the item visual up here using the get element visual. And now I'm starting those animations on a specific property of the visual and attaching the animation definition that I've created, which actually is a template, and you can reuse these on different objects. It's not specific to one. And so I'm saying, hey, I want to start animation when the Y offset position, for Y offset position, and this is the animation I want to use for scale and opacity, and these are the other animations I want to use. And so now let's go ahead and see how our list view has changed as we do that. So this is a loaded event, so you'll watch and see how it changes the experience here. And so now our application in Cleva has a non-default experience where we've added our own personality to it and how the list loads, or how each individual item loads as it comes in. So after the splash screen, you'll notice as the list comes in, and they're going to scale and fade and come in at a different position each item. So it allows us to create, you know, a very subtle but a very different experience for our list. And that CCC event combined with the visual aspect is how we're able to do that. Now we also talked about pull to refresh. So let's start adding that capability here. So I'm going to go in and add a couple more member variables to my code here to kind of work with the pull to refresh. And these are things that we're going to create some more animations. And we're also going to just set some different properties for the different visuals that we're going to work with here. Now, whenever you do a pull to refresh, you want to give the user some feedback. So we're going to add an icon here. So we're adding a new image, and we're calling it refresh icon. And so we're going to add some visual to tell the user, like, hey, something's happening here. And we're just, in our case, we're just going to use a PNG that we're going to animate here. Now let's go back to our loaded event for the list in this case, not necessarily for each item, because we want to actually do this for the list. And here's our loaded event here. And so we're using some manipulation properties. So let me now comment those out and set up some of these aspects here. And let me walk through this again. Now, what you're going to see is, again, same, very, very similar pattern of what you're saying. Now, before I mentioned that the visual layer has an understanding of how XAML works with scrolling. And this is, again, an API off of the element composition preview where we can say, where you can pass in the scroll viewer and say, hey, I need the properties of, we call this the scroll viewer manipulation property set, and we pass in a XAML scroll viewer. And now that, now once I have that object, that allows me to use that that element and its properties as input to other animations. And those, the visual layer and the XAML scroll viewer are kind of updating each other and letting each other know what's going on there. So this is a nice helper API that is shows the integration between the visual layer and the XAML layer here. now, we're going to create some more animations here. So as our pull to refresh happens, we're going to rotate our visual that our icon that we have. And so we're going to create a new animation. Now, in this case, I'm creating something called an expression animation. Now, expression animation is where you're going to define some type of math that gets evaluated based on input parameters. And this will be probably some of the more powerful ones that you'll leverage when you create these really dynamic animations here. But again, the pattern is the same. From the compositor, I create an expression animation. Now, you see these next three lines is where I'm setting these parameters. And so the first two I'm just setting as just kind of like just immediate parameters that I just need to set the values to. And these, this first value, you can see how I have my multiplier and my max degree. This could say foo. These are your key names for what you define as the parameter here. And I'm saying, hey, this multiplier is a float of 10. My maximum degree of rotation is going to be a float of 400. The next one is called a reference parameter, and this is where I'm using that scroll viewer manipulation property set. And so this is basically saying, hey, for this parameter, it may change, so I need a reference to, you know, this property set that you already know about. In this case, it's the scroll viewer one. And so this is going to kind of that create that relationship so the expression gets reevaluated whenever those things change on the reference parameter. Now, the last thing I do once I have all my parameters set up is I'm going to define an expression. And so this is if you haven't seen this before, this is kind of an introduction to the expression syntax that you can use. So I'm using very, very simple expressions here. James is going to use some different ones that he'll explain a little bit here. But you can see how I use my parameters that I come in. So I have some math functions here, and I'm saying, hey, use this parameter and these properties off the scroll viewer, multiply them by my input parameters that I've set there. So that's basically the pattern of an expression animation. Create the animation, set some input parameters, and then define the expression. We're going to do the same thing for opacity and offset. So I'm not going to walk through those there. Excuse me. Now, for how we attach those, again, the same pattern. So I'm getting that refresh icon visual, which is I'm using the get element visual. And this is our image element on the XAML. So we're getting the actual visual layer for that. Setting the center point property because we want to rotate on the center. We're getting another visual for the border in order to be able to interact with the Y offset here. And then the similar pattern, we're going to start the animations. So for our icon, we have the visual, and we're going to say, hey, I want to start the animation for rotation and degrees, opacity, and the Y offset. And we're attaching and connecting all those animations. Now, the other thing I need to do is actually just put some helper functions here. And these are just some of the other manipulation events. So these are not necessarily, we're not going to walk through these, but you'll be able to access these a little bit later so you can understand what's going on. But these are just hooking into the dminit functionality here. So let's go ahead and run this now. And we have our list view that will show up. And then we'll show you the experience here. Now remember, we added that stagger animation to anything that gets created in the list view. So as a new item gets refreshed or added in, we'll also have that thing come in with that same animation. So we kind of create that delightful experience, not just on the initial load, but continues through the user experience. Probably turn off my debug symbols. So we have our list, and it loads, and it has our specific animation. Now, watch as I manipulate the list, and you see the visual kind of fade in and kind of show the user some feedback. And then when I let go, it's going to do some things. So let's see if James has been doing any workouts yet. So now we actually, let's see if we can actually get this to work here. You can see, so I have this bike thing, and as James's new item comes in, now we can actually see that, and it kind of created and had those other connected animations, or those other animations already connected to the loading event there. So by tying it to the scroll viewer manipulation property area, we get that we're able to use those scroll viewer manipulations to kind of drive those other properties as input to that visual, and now that we're just animating that visual. So that's how a way that you can implement, in a performant way that you can implement pull to refresh. Oops. Okay, so we mentioned connected animations and delivering context to your users as you navigate from one view to the other. So I forgot to show you, as we select an item in the list, once you select an activity, it goes to kind of the activity detail view when you're in a smaller window or in a mobile experience. So we happen to be on the desktop, but we're just using a smaller window so we can demonstrate this well. So as I look at, let's look at Jeff Wilcox, you guys might know Jeff. And when I click on that, it navigates me to a view with his specific event, and you know, we kind of lost context there, right, as far as what happened there. So you know, which one did I select, and you know, if it's not obvious, you know, we want to have a more pleasing experience to the user there. So let's see what we can do there on the for connected animations. So let's go ahead and go to the item click event. So we already have an item click event that's happened in there. And what we're going to do here is we are going to actually get from the item, we want to get the element that was clicked, and we're going to find that athlete profile picture, so basically like Jeff's avatar. And that's just an image brush that's in an ellipse. And so that's the thing that we actually want to provide that contextual animation over to the new view. Now the thing that we're going to use, and I mentioned that you can do light up here, and so we're going to say, hey, if this type is present, Windows UI .xaml media animation connected animation service, and this allows this to run when it'll run on the existing platform, but if this API is available, then we'll execute this code as well. Now how we do the connected animation service is, we're going to create the connected animation service. And if you've done a lot of WinRT development, this is a very similar pattern where we have the kind of this get for current view aspect. So if you use application view and things like that, you'll see this very often where you get things for the current view. So same pattern that should be familiar to you if you've been writing UWP apps. Once we have that connected animation service, we want to tell it, we want to say, hey, I want to prepare to animate something. And we're going to give it a key. Again, this could be foo or whatever. This is your defined key. Now, I'm going to make sure it's a little bit more readable. So I'm calling it athlete profile picture. And I need to tell it which UI element it is. And so that's that, that ellipse that we want. So we got that ellipse from the item click event. And we're saying, I want to prepare to animate that thing and just call it athlete profile picture. So now the service is saying, I'm preparing this image, and I'm jamming it in under this key name. So now on the detail view, we need to do a similar aspect here. So let's go to the detail view, and let's go find where that image actually ends up. which is near the bottom here. So here's the athlete profile picture. And here's the image brush that that is used here for when the bitmap image happens here. So we're going to do that in the image opened event so that we can make sure that the image is actually decoded. And we'll go ahead and go here to this function. And now we're going to use the other side of the connected animation service here. So we're going to do the same API check here. Now, here's a little to-do. There's a bug. We're showing our warts in the current system we have here. So you shouldn't have to do that in the final release here. But we're going to use the same pattern. We're going to say, hey, go get me the connected animation service. And now instead of preparing, I need to get the animation. And I need to get the key that we did, athlete profile picture. And I want to say try start. And I need to tell it now the destination of where I want that animation to be. Now, if we go back to our detail control here, our image is also called athlete profile picture. So that's the place where I want it to go. And so we want to try start, and we're going to give it that particular UI element. So that's it. So on the source page, we've said prepare to animate this UI element, give it a key. On the destination page, we want to say, hey, go get me that animation, and here's my destination place where I want you to show it. So let's go ahead and run this and see what our experience looks like as well. We have another bug, and I forgot to reset that, so pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. So as I start this, because of this other bug that we currently have, you'll see that our list view will appear to load twice, and the pull to refresh icon will be showing when it shouldn't be showing. But we're working on that. So before you get it, it'll be good. So now when the list loads, remember we took that athlete profile image, and when we select it, we want it to go to the next page. So when I select Jeff's picture, let's do that again so we can get past that one bug. You can see that, we'll do Dan. How it animates and brings that context back. So as I kind of scroll through, if I'm a little bit lower in the list, and do Anne-Marie, it animates from that one position. So now we have a better experience that brings context to the user, and we just really did really one line of code and just two methods off that, preparing the animation and getting the animation on a different area here. Last thing I want to show you is the view of implicit animations here. So if we go in here, and if I look at my specific profile here, and the people that are following me, as I resize this window, you can see how it's just kind of really jerky and here's my wife, here's the test, follow my wife's picture, where is it? So it's a little bit hard, it's a little bit jarring, it's not beautiful. So let's see how we can use implicit animations on those items and just say, hey, when those positions move, change the animation here. So we're going to go back and we're going to use that CCC event again on the profile page. And we're going to tap into that rendering pipeline in order to get to that visual here. Stop. So if we go to our profile page, and if we look at, this is our grid view for our friends. So we're going to go in here and say container content changing, and we'll go ahead and just do the default there. Say go to definition. Wait for VS. And so we're going to do the same thing here. So we're getting the visual from the specific item as it's in that render pipeline. So we're getting the container. We're setting an offset animation. In this case, we're saying, hey, we care about the final value of where this is going to be. And now we're doing something slightly different. So we're first creating an implicit animation map. So this is a map of all the properties we care about that are going to change so that we're going to run the animation on. So the only thing we actually care about in this instance is the offset, the position of where it is. So I'm saying, hey, I care about the offset, and when that offset changes, this is the animation I want you to play. And then on that visual, we just tell it, here's the implicit maps that you need to be aware of here. So again, same pattern. Create the animation. We're setting up the map. That's a little different thing. And we're attaching it to the visual. So now if we rerun that and look at that profile page, anytime the grid view is automatically, because you're not changing the position, the grid view is automatically moving those things around, but the grid view itself is changing the offset. So now since we've added that animation, the offset is changing under the hood, and this animation will kick in and giving us a much more pleasing experience. So now we go back to our profile page. And you'll even see it when it comes in, is the items load there. So now, if you kind of follow my wife's picture, you probably try to find it, follow it a little bit better. But a much more pleasing experience rather than that jarring, just kind of snapping experience there. So hopefully that gives you an idea of those four things that you can do to kind of, you know, just really level up your experiences a little bit in the more common ways. And so I'm going to turn it over to James for a little bit more some advanced aspects.
Awesome. So what do you think, guys? So I'm going to turn my attention now to some effects, and I'm going to try and go through this and show you kind of a fairly overview level kind of view of this. The first thing I want to start on is this sort of header panel that we saw, and you saw in Tim's version there that he had this nice kind of blurred effect with the tint on it. And to pull that off, we use a number of the new ingredients that we're adding. So we're using our new Gaussian blur effect. We're also using a special kind of brush called a destination or backdrop brush. And this is how we actually can sort of see through and have that blur effect applied to whatever's behind the panel. We also want to do a bit of color tinting and not just have, you know, here's some sort of clear kind of glassy texture, but actually here's a tinted texture. And finally, we want to add a little bit of a drop shadow so that you can sort of see on that lower edge that the header kind of sits a little bit above the background. So that's our first experience. And what we're going to do is a couple of simple steps. I'm actually going to use a custom control called backdrop. And this is actually something that we're shipping in source code form. It's a reference implementation of a custom control. And we're actually going to be shipping it in our new GitHub account that is the Windows UI DevLabs account on GitHub, and we'll be sharing a link at the end of the talk. And this will just get us started really, really, really fast. We'll also go through and add that drop shadow effect, and we'll wire up our color source as well. So that's the first thing. The second one that we're going to show you is a little bit more custom input, and this is something that we refer to lovingly in the trade as shy headers. I don't know if you guys have ever kind of played with this sort of thing before, but the notion is as we scroll, we want to actually kind of reuse the space. As that scroll view scrolls up, we want to kind of get rid of that header and have that design element there initially, but it kind of goes away when we want to see more information. And in this one, we're using the same backdrop control. We're using the scroll view manipulation property set that Tim talked about, and we're basically going to wire up some expressions. And then the final thing that we're going to do is bring in some lighting. And this is where we actually have an ability to do both image-based and scene lighting. And we're going to take the list view at the bottom of this page and kind of put that light source in and kind of shine the light on there. So that's what I'm going to show you. And in the lighting one, we may not get through all of these steps, but we'll at the very least kind of add the light to the scene for us. So let's jump over to the demo machine, which is number 8, I think. And so this is the starting state for the first demo where we do the shy headers. So if I come in, what I can see is essentially, you know, a more typical kind of solid orange fill in my header area. And I want to go in and use the blur panel. So what I'm going to do is just come into my activity detail control. This is the control that's hosting that detail information. And I'm just going to change this to be my custom control. I mentioned it's called backdrop. It's in the namespace visual layer. And the source code for this is in GitHub. So if you want to do this sort of thing, you'll be able to go pick it up. Now, because backdrop doesn't have a fill, I'm going to get rid of this. What it does have is a blur amount property. So if we come in here and add 15 pixels worth of blur, we should start to see that nice effect. So I'm just going to go into the source of backdrop and do a little bit of customization. So if I just hit the right key and scroll down, what I want to do now is just show you how we can easily add a drop shadow effect to this. So we're going to come in and do a little bit of code that will add our drop shadow. So here, in the same pattern as Tim was using, we're going and retrieving visuals. We're creating a new visual, and that's the thing that we're going to put the drop shadow on. We're then using our compositor that we already retrieved, and we're using that to create the drop shadow object. And then we're setting that object on the shadow property of our sprite visual. So pretty simple, small number of steps there. And when we run it, what we will hopefully see is the power of the composition engine at work, with any luck and cross fingers. So what you will see here is we've got our blur effect, we've got our drop shadow. And as I move around the map, notice how this is updating at 60 frames a second. So this isn't a static snapshot. This isn't a render target bitmap. This is completely live. And what's really nice about this is the thing that I'm blurring is actually the map control. And those of you that are familiar with this, the map control is actually written and implemented using kind of DirectX. And so the compositor, you know, we kind of got rid of airspace issues. We got rid of issues where the compositor kind of didn't understand everything it was drawing. And so with this technology, our map control happily updates. And we get a nice blur effect as well. Let's now quickly add the tint. And this is, again, showing that in our effects system, you're not just limited to individual effects. You can actually chain these effects together and build quite complex effect graphs. And under the covers, the compositor will compile those shaders up and instance them for us. So let's come into the code where we're building our Gaussian blur effect here. And we're just essentially newing one of these up. We're setting some properties on it. And we're then creating an effect factory. And that's where we take this sort of set of descriptions for shaders, and we tell the compositor, go compile these and go add them to our scene. So I'm just going to come in now and do a small... Get this right. Try again. There we go. A little bit of a tweak to my effect pipeline. So instead of just having that blur effect on its own, I'm going to add a color source. And this is, again, you can think of it as a shader fragment for generating a solid color. And then I'm going to bring in this blend effect. And this is really how we then want to combine together the solid color fill with the blur so that it doesn't feel, so that it, you know, kind of gives you that tinted glass effect. And I will now simply come in and replace the object that I passed the effect, to the effect factory, create the blend effect, and because the blend effect has got a foreground and a background, it's combining those two items together. So let's just run this quickly, and we'll hopefully see our nice colored blur. And there you go. Awesome. So there's one more thing I'll show you with blur, and I mentioned the power of the compositor. You can actually blur anything underneath that may even be updating at 60 frames a second. So what I'm going to do now is just show you the login screen of the Cleaver app. And we did a little bit of a tweak to this, and what we did was we essentially added a video. We got Tim to wear a GoPro. He went on a bike ride. He made a video, believe it or not, and we then created a nice kind of sped up version of that using Hyperlapse. And so if we just launch this other version, what you'll see is a Hyperlapse version of Tim out on his bike, and you can see there's a nice animation. So we're sort of animating the amount of blur over time, and now we have this sort of kind of playful login experience for Cleaver. What do you think? Quite cool? Awesome. Okay, so now we're going to show you our shy header. I'm just going to reset my local repo here. Come over to my activity detail control. And I'll go through this pretty quickly because this is sort of building off of what Tim showed in terms of our manipulation engine and our input animations. So we're now sort of getting to the point where we want to show you shy headers. So we're going to come to one of these guys here. And notice how if I scroll this scroll viewer, it's part of my pivot control. And whether I do that with touch or mouse, it doesn't matter. These are all it's all the same. Notice how essentially nothing is happening. My header is not reacting in any way. So what we'll do is come in and fix that. We'll just hit up edit and continue. And we'll come in and do our first thing. So as Tim already explained, we create up an expression animation, we set a reference parameter, and so on and so forth. So the interesting part here is the expression. What I'm doing is I'm essentially saying, just take that Y offset aspect of the scroll viewer, reach in and get my activity map, which is a pivot, and reach in and get my activity pivot and my activity map, and essentially start this expression animation on the offset Y property. So not particularly hard. We're just literally mapping whatever the Y value of the scroller is directly onto the header. So now when we scroll, watch what happens. That pivot is sliding up and down. And again, if I use touch, it's completely smooth. It gets the nice overbounce effect. But there's a bit of a problem. If I continue to scroll, it's kind of broken. It's scrolling too much. So I want to restrict that kind of amount of scroll to a particular value. So the way that I do that is I just use part of the power of the expression system, and I do what we call a clamp. And the clamp essentially says, take whatever this value is. If it gets less than 200, just return 200. If it gets greater than zero, just return zero. And hopefully through the magic of...
Oh. Yeah, just move that.
Oh, what did I do? What do I do? Edit?
Yeah.
Crud. Oh, I'm not very good at this. minus 200, zero.
Paren.
Close paren. There we go. Thank you very much. Okie dokie. So now we just need to reload that view just by navigating forward and back. And now I did something wrong. What did I do wrong? I can't actually tell what I did wrong. So anyways, the clamp is just really showing an example. There you go. That's working now. It's really just showing an example of how you can use these expression capabilities to build these kind of nice effects. So let's just bang in a couple more steps. I won't talk through them in great detail, but I'll show you how, if we come in here, we can make items fade out. And so we're doing another very simple expression here. We're normalizing it so that over the course of 80 pixels, we're essentially normalizing it so that it makes the opacity go from 1 to 0, and that's what this value of 80 divided or minus 80 divided by minus 80. And we're then just going to apply this to a number of items in our header. So the profile picture that you can see, the little cyclist icon, all of these guys are going to be essentially reusing that same animation. Let's now hook up the blur. And this is showing that the input system can also alter properties on blur. So here, the thing that makes this interesting is notice how we're taking the blur panel and we're targeting fade value, and this will then kind of make our shader actually react in real time to the input. So let's just run it at that stage.
I think as it's running too, what you'll see when you're able to inspect the code is that the one thing that I like to point out is like the animations are defined once, and you can apply that same animation. So when James was referring to those five elements that were animating and fading out, it's the same definition, and it's just connected five different times. Rather than having to create a storyboard that has a target for each one, you know, by name or anything like that, you basically kind of have a template system.
Exactly. So here you can see it working now, and you can see it's literally following my finger, the amount of blur there. So the effects system is fully integrated into this pipeline. Okie dokie. So let's do our final demo. We're going to show you a little bit of lighting now. So we'll hop over to our next place, reload, and run. I had a little bit of an accident this week. I wanted to put in some pictures into the Strava service to show you this demo. And so I went for a run, and this was actually a terrifyingly bad mistake because I failed to do the one thing that your mom always tells you to do, which is whenever you exercise, make sure you stretch first. I didn't do this, and my foot is killing me as a result. So there was blood, sweat, and tears for this demo for you. What I'm going to do is just switch to my own feed. And this will load up the various things. And you can see here, morning run around the financial district. And I was very kind of, I tried really hard. I managed to get up to 25 miles an hour average speed. How amazing. But I also took a camera with me.
Kilometers,
yeah. See, I tried. I tried to con you. It didn't work.
Let's not boost the ego that much.
So I took some pictures, and that really shows how wrong the average speed is there. And if I load these up, you can see them presented in this sort of somewhat normal grid view. You know, it looks fine. You know, you can go in and scroll through them. But what if we want a little bit more of a delightful experience? And so Our esteemed dev manager helped put this control together. The control that I'm using here is, again, shared on GitHub. If you want this kind of experience in your app, you can go and grab it and just take it wholesale. When I click on something, a whole series of things happen. We have a nice connected animation run, and you can see the background, the sort of the edge around this experience is desaturated nicely, and you can see the UI remains live, and again, the power of Destination Brush is powering this. And as I sort of select different images, and you can sort of see, I was in rapture at the beauty of San Francisco this morning and just going crazy and taking different pictures. You can see we've kind of got this animated blur in the background. We're doing color extraction. So if I click on something blue, we get that little blue tint. But what about if we want to just spice this up a little bit with some lighting? So again, what I'm going to do is just pop in and show you some code. So this image pop-up viewer control is a user control. And it's using some pretty straightforward things. It's using a list view. And in that list view, it's using this thing called composition image. And composition image is, again, another of the controls that we're shipping in this open source project. And composition image knows a little bit more capabilities than the built-in XAML image. This guy has the ability to do things like placeholders, the ability to do things like fade-in animations. And the other thing that's nice about it is you can actually plug our effect pipeline into it here. So basically, we have the container content changing, the CCC event hooked up, as Tim showed. And in here, we're just basically retrieving that composition image from our content template route. So we're just getting that back. And we're doing this for every single image in the list view. And what we're then doing is we're just setting a source on it with a URI. And if we could set this up and it would do a nice placeholder animation if we wanted to. I'm not doing that here. And then we just want to basically set up some lighting. And so we have a placeholder. I'm going to come in and just drop in the code here. And I'm again using an effect factory. And the effect factory is where we store all the different nodes that we need to shine the light in there. I'm just going to, for now, not show you that code. I'm going to create my brush. And then because each image is different in the list, we have to essentially set the brush on each of those images. So again, this is running in the container content changing event, and it will go and set up each image with a light source. So let's just run that and see what we get now. And let's see. And there you can sort of see that light source. Now, what's quite nice about this is we applied that light source to all of the images, and you can see exactly where it's shining. And for all of the places that it's not shining, it's kind of a little bit darker, and then you have this nice radius. And you can sort of see it all kind of working seamlessly. So we have this notion of being able to define lights globally and then apply them to multiple objects in the scene. How are we doing for time? 3 minutes left. I think we will wrap it there. We will not do any more demos. Anyways, what do you guys think about this? So Tim, what's the 3-minute summary of this talk?
Yes, three-minute summary is hopefully that we've been able to show you today kind of talking again about that possible versus easy spectrum. You saw a lot of code that worked at the visual layer, so demonstrating a lot that's possible, some more that's at the XAML layer. So to give you an idea of like things that we talked about were implicit animations and effects and those scroll viewer properties working at the visual layer in conjunction with the XAML layer. The visual exposure and the drivers for the implicit animation as far as just changing the properties within your XAML properties, and then that connected animation, that context that allows you to go back. So I'm going to breeze through this here. So you can download the slide and kind of take a look at that pattern. We want to make sure you understand that pattern because it's repeated in all the samples that we show and everything like that. So you may ask, like, where are we going with this? So our desire is, of course, to move more and more into the easy stack. Effects is a good example that we kind of like to talk about. Hooking up the effects is a lot of code. The system is very, very powerful and allows a lot of what's possible. And I'm sure a lot of you in the audience are probably saying, yeah, but I want button.effect and just let me plug in right there. And so those are the types of things that we're evaluating as how we can continue to make more and more of that easy and higher up in the stack. Connected animations is a good example of that. You can still do that in the visual layer, and it's a lot of code in order to manage that visual across some context. Or you can use those, the capability that we provided in just saying prepare and get. So our goal is to move more, is first of all to do more in the visual layer, and then also to expose it in a better way at the XAML, at the framework layers, so that you can make better use of those things. So as we close, we wanted to make sure that, again, we call out to our great MVP friends, and a lot of the stuff that you showed and all the stuff that we did to work with the apps. This is the URL for the Kleva app, and we pushed the branch that we were working on. It was the name I came up with last night, Alcatraz, so I figured it was a good one. There's a branch there for you to take a look at all this code. It's our desire on James and I's teams that we continue to help Kleva continue to use a lot of these features and be a great reference example for you as the developers on how you can introduce and improve beautiful user experiences there. And maybe you'll be inspired to contribute as well. The caveat is, we've done a lot of code here. The build bits that you are downloading today will not compile on this branch because we're using a lot of things that have just been checked in. But in a future, very, very soon future flight of the SDK and the OS that you'll get updated, things will start to light up again. But we wanted to make sure that everything that we showed today, you can go ahead and take a look at and kind of spelunk and start asking questions and have that conversation with us. And speaking of that conversation, these are the ways to get a hold of us. The code samples and all the things that James mentioned on how you can get them is that first URL right there, aka.ms/winuilabs. And so that has a lot of different playground things, I would call it, and a lot of some of those encapsulated controls, the background blur, backdrop is what you call it, right? Backdrop is what we're calling it. So this is specific to the Windows UI platform team, and these are more kind of end-to-end experience examples and lab-type environments there. And of course, the UWP samples are still there, and there'll be still some XAML things there and still some visual layer things there. But we want to make sure you see the first one there, talking about how we kind of put a lot of these pieces together. We also invite you to kind of join the conversation with our team. Let us know and give us feedback. So on Twitter, we have our handle on Twitter is Windows UI. So please feel free to follow us and engage with us there. And of course, use the feedback app if you actually find issues. The feedback app directly gets bugs into our system. And that's the best way to interact from a bug perspective. And that's it. Please fill out an evaluation. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, guys.
And we're certainly happy to stick around and answer questions. And we'll also be going back to the UX booth in the hub as well. I'm happy to answer.